This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taryn's update for Survivor.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Survivor Stock Watch podcast for episode 3 of season 41. Drop the one, leave the community. I'm your host, Brent Armstrong, and I am joined today by a wonderful man here, Ovi from Big Brother. How you doing, Ovi?
Hey, I'm doing good, Taryn. Always the highlight of my day, my week, when you ask me to come on here. So I'm really happy to be here and talk about Survivor.
Yes. Ovi, you've been a Survivor fan for a while. What's your history with Survivor?
Yeah, no, I love Survivor. Survivor's always been my first love, even though I was on Big Brother. I grew up watching Survivor. My mom, like, she watched Survivor when they first immigrated to the United States. So it's kind of cool seeing some, like, players this year talk about their journey. And so Survivor was really, like, instilled into my life at a young age. So loved it, watched it, auditioned for it. Got far in the process, didn't make it on, so Big Brother worked out. But yeah, Survivor is my first love, and I'm a little biased now, but I like it a little bit more than Big Brother at this point.
There you go. All right. Well, we are here to talk about episode 3 of Survivor, and of course, we are all...
I'm so happy I'm here.
Just so happy that we're here. what an interesting episode here. I was really in love with the premiere. I loved the new direction it seemed to take. It was a 2-hour premiere, and I think that's why I loved it. Episode 2, I wasn't as much of a fan of episode 2. I felt like the misdirection wasn't great, and I felt like it was a little too focused on some of the advantages that were, especially the repeat advantages. Episode 3 comes in, and it's also very advantage focused. I mean, this is probably the most advantage heavy episode in the history of the show. There's not a single segment of the entire episode that does not have something to do with advantages, including the immunity challenge, obviously.
Yeah.
Very advantage heavy. I will say, though, at least for me, the advantages that were in this episode were at least a little bit different. We didn't get the same extra vote one. We got something a little bit different, which I appreciated. We also, I felt like, had some great character moments and some fun things that happened. I probably have more sound clips from this episode than the entirety of the previous two episodes.
Oh, no, I love that. I love that.
I've seen a lot of complaints, and I'd certainly have a lot of complaints for this episode, but I still really enjoyed myself in it. So I'm excited to talk about it. Okay.
Yeah, no, I think just kind of jumping off what you just said, it's been a really interesting season. I think the cast is absolutely incredible. And I think it's been a while since we've had a cast that's so dynamic, fun to watch, who do want to play like you have, and we'll get into, but a character like Brad, who is kind of the mixture of like a little bit of Tony and then some other types of play. Like, you have some really cool cast, but I do think, unfortunately, I was hoping it just might be like the start off it, but it seems like the advantages, the factors outside of the players are really kind of like controlling the narrative in the game versus the cast. And so that's kind of what I've not so happy to see, because I really just want the players to be able to play the game. And unfortunately, as we saw today, or not today, but Wednesday, they haven't been able to play their own game in certain ways because there's so many risks, advantages, and you just don't know. So, yeah, I'd love to talk about it.
Yes. And with so much focus on the advantages, I think my biggest complaint about the season so far is that it feels like Survivor has taken another step forward in not fully explaining the moves that are being made. It feels like we're not really getting an explanation for it. And that is what this podcast is all about, trying to figure out what's actually happening. So on one hand, they're making my job even harder. On the other hand, I feel like, a podcast like this is even more necessary for a season like this. So, let's try and figure it out here, Ovi.
Okay, I'd love to do that.
Okay. Well, we open up the episode with the Yellow Tribe. Yase, whatever it is. It's Yellow. Yellow.
So many names.
Tribe. Yeah. And of course, by the way, I forgot to mention, we will also be rating all the players at the end of this podcast. Yep. So that'll be fun as well. Rate them based on their game. But I will also try and talk about my observations of the edit. The edit will not be included in the ratings that we do later, but I will still make comments based on what we're sort of seeing in the edit. And of course, the edit informs, gameplay observations as well. You can't really fully escape it, but we open up here with Yellow and Liana. And what I was hoping for was an explanation of the previous vote, because it was particularly kind of out of left field, even though it seemed fairly obvious that it was coming. That it really felt like we didn't understand why. I mean, we saw that Tiffany wanted Voce to go because she was worried about a potential idol that everybody knew wasn't actually active. But beyond that, we didn't really get an explanation for why Evie would actually go along with that. And we open up with Liana saying she feels like the Xander move would have been genius, and she really regrets not having pushed it.
Yeah, no, it's so frustrating. I think that I love an edit where you're not sure who's going home. I think that's great, but I love it when the players aren't sure. I don't like it when they omit facts. Like, there's already a clear indication of where it's going to go, and instead of showing us that episode or the next episode, they just kind of leave it for us to fill in, because it seems that from my understanding after last episode, because I was like, oh, you need to get Xander out. Even though I love Xander, I was like, it to me at that point was a clear indication, because this is a shot you can take. You know the advantages. He's not able to play it. And then it's switching the boat. I thought maybe they were all on board, but we saw at the beginning of this episode, Liana was really upset that she didn't take that shot. And so I think there was a little confusion on our side of, well, okay, are they going to go into explain? Is there going to be a conversation between Liana and all the rest of that team about why they went to the decision? But it kind of moved on very quickly from that. So, and I think we saw that pattern happen a little bit this episode too, which I'm hoping, I just want some answers, you know? And I love that it makes your job, you know, harder, but also maybe people want to watch it, but I would wish there was some more help on that side.
Yeah, we got nothing from Evie about why they made the decision they did. Mm-hmm. We got nothing from Xander about whether he was in on the vote, how he's feeling about the fact that Voce just left. What is it, blindside? Or is he feeling like he's now on the outs? Like, what is he thinking? How desperate is he to get this idol activated? Mm-hmm. How does he feel once he hears Brad later in the episode? We get none of that, of course. Instead, we hear from Liana, and she says that she wishes that she had made the move. She says she's here. She came here to play. And she wants to be a great player, and she feels like things just slipped through her fingers last night. But she says she's never going to give up, and there's always an opportunity to flip the narrative. This seems like an important confessional to me, and an important segment, because again, we're not getting an explanation of what happened in the vote, but we are hearing Liana say that she regrets doing it. And that strikes me as important, because in the last episode, it felt like they were portraying that decision to be a mistake. It felt like, and let me tell you, the entire audience was like, what a mistake, which means they got their point across. And it felt like they were angling for that response. And then at the start of the next episode, they're reinforcing it with a player saying that was a mistake. And to me, that signals probably bad things for Evie edit wise, probably good things for Xander being the mistake. And maybe good things for Liana as the person voicing the mistake. And interestingly, of course, as she's talking about missing an opportunity, she misses the advantage that's sitting right next to her that night. My theory on this as well is that her being this upset was more about her missing the advantage than it was about the Xander vote. But they really wanted to hammer home the point that the Xander vote was a mistake, because she's later, after the advantage is found, going to say, and then I missed the advantage. And that's when she's like really upset. And it felt like that's what she was talking about more so than the Xander vote to me.
No, I think that's a good point you made, because she was upset that Tiffany was the one who got it in front of her. She couldn't really take, like, she was there the night before, had the opportunity, just didn't realize it. I think the one, it's weird to me, because correct me if I'm wrong, Xander had zero confessionals this episode, I think, or maybe if zero, one. But there was no, what you would think, that him being so close to Voce, him having that connection with Evie, basically from what we see, him being blindsided, essentially. But I think he might have been notified prior to the vote, which I'm thinking as well, and I think you mentioned beforehand. But there was no confessional kind of to confirm that. So I think it's very strange that we were kind of left almost a blank, where Evie and Xander were huge characters these first two episodes. I think Evie had like 20-plus confessionals in episode two versus she had zero this one. Xander had zero. And so it wasn't really explained how he was feeling. And that's what I wanted to know, if he felt blindsided about Voce, who was, I think, an incredible character we lost early. But I wanted to see what was the ramifications of that.
So we move forward and we see that Tiffany is going to find this another beware advantage. This one is not really hidden at all. It's just kind of sitting there at camp. And she finds it right in front of Liana and Evie. She says that she would not have shared it with them if they hadn't seen her, which I do appreciate her letting us know that. And it says, she says, it says that she will need to sneak out of camp that night, get on a boat, and make a decision. Failure to do so will result in the loss of her vote at the next tribal council. This is the alternative version to Advantage Island, where they go on a hike and they make a choice about an extra vote. This is instead sneak out of camp and make a choice about a steal a vote.
Yeah, it's so strange. And there's just so many advantages in episode three that I feel like there's more, like, I've learned more about the advantages than I have about the cast. Like, it is, I truly need a spreadsheet with me trying to figure out who has which advantage. What does this advantage do? Does it, so if you get a steal a vote advantage, but you can't vote because of another curse of an advantage, what, you know, and I love this show. I watch this show quite a lot. You know, I look up, you know, what people are saying. I'm confused. I can't imagine what somebody who's just watching on a Wednesday night or turning it on and be like, oh, Jeff said that we're going back to basics. We're going to have, you know, it's going to be really back to survival. Well, I haven't seen one camp be made at all. All I'm seeing is advantages. So, I just think it's a lot.
It is a lot. And again, we cap this off, this segment with the Yellow Tribe, with Liana again saying, she's really upset that she missed that. It was sitting right next to her. And she says, maybe that was my $1 million mistake, which again implies to me that because that's the same confessional where she was talking about Xander. It really felt to me like she was mostly talking about missing the idol. She also regretted not taking the shot at Xander. But when she's talking about wanting to be a big player, wanting to do all that stuff, and then caps it off with maybe that's a $1 million mistake, it really feels like she's most upset about missing that advantage personally. We head over to the Green Tribe, and JD is doing some impressions. He's going to do a Reem impression, and he also does a Wu impression. So I actually I went and got the real Wu quote. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So I want to do a comparison. How well do we think he impressioned Wu? Here is JD doing a Wu impression.
I bust out my arsenal, okay, which is my ninja stealth mode. I'm cruising the path, Sonic the Hedgehog style. There's no way he's catching me.
Okay, and here is the real Wu.
I'm going to pull out something out of my arsenal, which is my ninja stealth mode. I hightail it, boom, Sonic the Hedgehog style. I'm cruising through the path. There's no way he's catching me.
I heard Steven say that this was very bad. I actually don't think it was that bad.
It was on the mark. Sorry, I'm putting my charger in here, so I apologize for the going back and forth thing. But no, I don't think it was as bad as people said. And I think here's the thing is people don't realize that people know, but you're stuck on an island. You're figuring out whatever you can do to like have fun and like fill in the gaps of time. So if one of the things you're allowed to do is copy past Survivor players, I mean, might as well try it.
Yeah, it felt like he added like a little bit of a lisp to it that I don't think Wu has. So I don't know where
probably,
that came from.
Yeah.
But in general, I feel like he captured the essence of it, which is important. He also got the quote like almost entirely correct. So kudos to him, I guess.
A super fan. He knows how to make, you know, replicate the voices of some past players, forgets to put in advantages all the way into his pocket. But we'll get to that in a second.
Yes. Well, Brad is not a fan of the impressions. He says, what are they doing over laughing like it's a beach party? He's a hard worker and hard work pays off. And he proves this by then finding the beware advantage in the middle of camp. He then grabs it and reads it in the middle of camp, which I thought, I was like, what are you doing? Anyone could see you just reading a piece of paper in front of anyone. Maybe there was nobody around, but even so, I was like, what are you doing, man? But he's excited. He's loving it all. He's high risk, high reward. He's like a kid in a candy store. And you really do feel like his glee of playing the game. And this is when you're like, ah, this Brad guy's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think that's where I was really like, I think he just enjoys the game. And I think I love having those type of players on the show who are huge fans but aren't very – I don't mean this in a bad way because I think it's perfectly fine, but game body, you know, who are very like robot. Like they make the plans of certain game plays. They want to do this. They're here for the money, which I completely understand. They want to be there. But I love it when we see a player who's there for the experience like Brad, who just does like anything he wants to do, tries his hardest to play in the game. I'm sorry, there's a corgi trying to attack me who loves Brad as well. I fell in love with Brad at that moment too.
He's, to me, he's such a dad. Like he's such like, oh yeah, let's do this. Let's do the competitions and we'll lie and backstab, but we'll work hard and it'll be fun. And we'll goof off, but in a serious way. Like, he's such a dad. He's like, and he repeats again, hard work, will be rewarded in the game. Not for him, but maybe for someone else. I don't know.
Yeah, not for him. This guy was a huge fan of the Brad. He would take any advantage he could see. He's, enjoyed the episode a lot for most of it.
Did he play like Brad?
He would run after everybody on the island probably, and he doesn't know when to shut up. That's an issue of his, and like Salik. It might be a little weird. There might be some production issues right there. He's not the best about that.
I could see him eavesdropping on conversations.
He would. He would bark, let them know he's there. He's low to the ground, so I think he might mesh in with the sand possibly. Exactly. But sorry, every time I'm like with an interview, I think it's almost like clockwork. Mowgli would run into here, wants to jump in here. I don't think there's been like a at all session we've ever done without Mowgli jumping on the screen.
He's got to get some screen time.
Yeah, he needs his screen time, so he's a real celebrity.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know It Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
All right. Well, we head over to the Blue Tribe, we are back with Sydney. I mean, Sydney really has been, in my view, in the edit, the foreperson of this Blue Tribe, with Deshaun and Danny being sort of secondary-ish characters, I think. And then Nasir is this kind of object of like, he's good, he's not, he's good, no, he's not. So we're going to see Sydney telling the rest of the tribe. It's all five of the players in the tribe, sitting on the beach minus Nasir. She is telling all of them that, hey, guess what happened last night? And we flash back to last night and it's Nasir telling Sydney, hey, we should go after Danny. Please don't tell anybody. Please don't tell him that I said this. And so then we flash back over to Sydney telling the entire tribe he wants to go after Danny. And we see Nasir in the background saying, I don't think I should have trusted Sydney. I think she's playing a double agent game. And Sydney tells us that she is changing her mind about Nasir. He is too erratic. And so he is now the target. We've got to take out Nasir.
Yeah, no, it's kind of strange because Sydney knows Nasir is confiding in her. She already knows Danny and these other folks aren't Team Nasir at all. So there's no reason, I feel like, to spread this type of information to dislike him more while he's already an ally for her. I think this is the type of time where you keep the information close to yourself. If you ever need to use it, if you're in trouble one way or the other, feel free to do it. But you're just giving free information out there, losing a potential ally there. And these people's opinions on Nasir isn't changing like very much. It's just putting the target even bigger on him. So I don't know. I think this might come back to bite her just because we've been seeing a really good edit of Nasir. I feel like he might be here for a little bit longer than some people think. And so I really like him. I think it's really just his character himself resonates with me. I do think he might be, you know, he might speak first before he thinks sometimes, but he plays a game with his heart on his sleeve. And I think we see that like afterwards when it gets awkward, when she tells everybody, hey, this is going on, Nasir can kind of detect that. And he's just like, hey, if you guys have an issue with me, put it up in the open. So, yeah.
Yeah. This to me, this segment felt like, you know, I think in the preseason, and I wasn't really very knowledgeable with what was happening in the preseason, in the draft, I chose Sydney and people were like, excuse me. And I was like, uh-oh. but in the preseason, I think people were expecting a certain character from Sydney. In the first couple of episodes, it's felt like she's been portrayed as very prominent, but also fairly neutral. However, this episode to me felt like the villainy breakout for Sydney.
Yeah.
The way that this whole segment was portrayed felt very targeted at Sydney being the bad guy. Yeah. In a somewhat subtle way, but not that subtle. You know, we've yet to see Nasir in a really bad light. I mean, when he is being targeted, it's not really due to something that he's doing that we don't like. It's more like, oh no, Nasir, poor Nasir. He's just too enthusiastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he's not being targeted, it's because he's such a great guy. And we're getting his perspective about how Sydney is, you know, a double agent. Whereas in the other tribes, the person in the middle who's being trusted by a bunch of people, you know, we're kind of applauding them. Sydney is like being called sneaky and a double agent. And I think that's in part because Sydney is not playing it as well as Evie or Shan here. You know, by exposing to the entire tribe what she found out about, you know, with Nasir is certainly not a way to make other people feel like they can be comfortable going to her with information. And then also we know from a secret scene last week that that Heather already is not a fan of Sydney. And then we're later going to find out that also Tiffany is immediately not too much of a fan of Sydney. So it does appear to be, I'm not saying that it's like an unfair portrayal necessarily, but it does seem like we are now getting Sydney is a villain. Sydney is somebody that we will be looking at, I think, as somebody that we will see as adversarial to probably the people that you like on the season. And this seems to be the real start of it as she finds this beware advantage that she actually is not happy about. She doesn't want this.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah, no, I think she's a smart player. And I think we see that as the way this advantage plays out and how she wants to, like, the way she tackles it with her mind. But the first two episodes have built Nasir up as just somebody you want to root for. You know, the whole storyline, even parts where you're like, the way they've edited parts that could be looked at him negatively, they've kind of changed, like, maybe him, like, throwing out names easily. But the show kind of showed, like, oh, it's okay. It's just Nasir just worrying about what's potentially happening, you know? And so then you have any character who goes against that is going to be set up as, like you said, kind of that villain archetype that we're going to see here. So we're getting shades of it from this edit so far. I'm not sure how long it goes, but I'm also hoping that it leads to Nasir staying longer. That's fingers crossed for that, because I really do like him. But we'll just have to see. So.
Yeah. So Sydney, I love what she does when she spots it in the middle of camp and just goes, you know what? I'm just going to go for it, which I think is the right call. Either you're then the one that gets it and everybody sees you and oh well, or you do get it and get away and nobody apparently notices, which is what happened. Because the worst case scenario there is that you hesitate and then somebody else gets it first.
Yeah.
So I like what she does there. She gets away with it. Opens it immediately, and then afterwards, like, if I had seen that it said beware, I might not have opened it. She does seem to me like, despite the fact that she seems like a brazen player in the sense that, again, she's exposing secrets to an entire tribe, she seems like a very cautious player. She did not want to go to Advantage Island in the premiere. She was like, not me. And then she did not want to do this. And then once she gets to this decision, of course, she's going to immediately say that she's going to choose the tarp, which we'll talk about. So she's consistently making these sort of conservative choices in the game, despite being a prominent figure, somebody that it seems to be somewhat polarizing to the other players, which is an interesting combination that I'm sure we'll talk more about as the season progresses.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting the way they are having her come to be, because, you know, things are so changed in the edit one way here. Some conversations are taken from this part. My question, though, for you, Garen, is do you feel – so what we're seeing a common theme is within these advantages, there is some sort of risk. This season, thankfully, they're telling him, hey, beware, there is actually a risk to it versus just kind of throwing it at them. Do you feel that these risks are – equal to the reward, or do you feel like they're a little unbalanced or across the board? I just want to see your take on that.
Well, so this is an interesting one to me because, you know, once we get to what this actual thing is, you know, I'm sure we'll talk more on it, but the risk to the reward of the idol, finding it that you lose your vote until the merge, unless other people find it and say the code words, that is very harmful to your game. And the only thing you get out of it is an idol that most people probably know you have at that point. Whereas this, you know, this steal a vote angle, it basically was like hidden in plain sight. You know, it's not that hard to find. And the risk is basically nothing. It's get on the boat or lose your vote for one tribal. Obviously you're just going to get on the boat. And then once you get there, you have the ability to risk your vote, in one tribal, or you can play it safe, choose tarp, and you definitely don't lose your vote. But the reward is a steal a vote, which in some ways is more powerful than an idol, on a small tribe. Not always. I think an idol is ultimately more powerful than a steal a vote, but a steal a vote is very, very powerful. I mean, think about it this way, right? If you have a 4-person tribe and it's 3-on-1, you can use a steal a vote to force a tie, in that spot. And because you're stealing a vote, I don't know how the revote works exactly, but, I guess you are probably, more. No, I mean, you're still less at risk than the other people, right? Because they're all voting on you. So the tiebreaker would be between the two people that voted on you. So that would be interesting. I don't know exactly how the tiebreaker works. Yeah. I know Brad doesn't know exactly either, given his exit interview. But ultimately, if the tiebreaker works, assuming like the way that you would think, if it's a four-person tribe, three people intend to vote on, let's say it's a 4-person tribe with Brad. I know Brad, or let's say it's Yasset, right? All of the you know, Evie, Liana and Tiffany vote out Xander, but Xander gets his immunity idol. He gets an immunity idol. He gets to play his immunity idol. Sure. That's fine. If they want to, they can split their votes 2 on Xander, 1 on, you know, whoever they want to be voted out. It will, and then Xander can put 1 vote on who he wants to be voted out. Let's say Liana and Evie vote out Tiffany, but Xander wants to vote out Evie. So it's then a tie when he plays his idol between Tiffany and Evie. And then in a revote, they can still kind of control those votes, or like force something, like they can still kind of control who goes out. Whereas if Xander has a steal a vote, he can steal Evie's vote and then put both votes onto, you know, whoever he wants, Tiffany maybe. And then it's 2-2. The tiebreaker, when they go to rocks is, either they flip on Evie, they flip on Tiffany, which they could if they wanted to, or it's between Liana and Evie. Either way, it's very powerful, here to have a steal a vote. Sorry for the diatribe there, but
No, I love it. I love it.
The different dynamics of these small tribes, being able to steal a vote is incredibly powerful. I guess the true advantage to an immunity idol in this season is that you can still play your idol when you don't have a vote, which is very easy to lose in this season, whereas you can't steal a vote if you don't have a vote. But either way, my ultimate point is the ability to get the steal a vote is massively powerful with nowhere near the disadvantages of the immunity idol. So I would say it is not particularly balanced.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love when you go in. That was my favorite thing. I think most people watching love when you break it down like that. And I think that's kind of my issue with it, because all these advantages are introducing a twist to the game in so many different ways that it's really difficult to account for what you don't know. Like you said, we don't know what happens in a tie. Brad didn't even know what happens in a tie. Somebody who doesn't even know this exists doesn't know this could possibly be a circumstance. And I think that's my issue with this season of Survivor so far, is that there is usually going to Survivor, if you're a fan or if you know the game, there's predetermined rules that you can kind of play your social game. You outwit, you know, you outlast, you, what's the third one? Outwit, outlast. I'm forgetting now, but outplay. But with these advantages, that's kind of sometimes out of your control with that. And so the basis of the rules aren't the same understanding for everyone, is what I'm saying with these advantages. And that's what I kind of don't like as much, because no one knew that this could be a possibility. Like, one of my other questions is that if you don't have a vote, right? And so since you can't vote, does it automatically become known during tribal council there's one person who didn't vote, and therefore they can suss it out who is it? There's just so many things that I feel like the players – yeah, sorry. We'll go on from that. I feel there's more disadvantages than advantages this season because of these advantages, and it's kind of frustrating to see that.
Yeah, it's definitely strange. So we'll get to the steal a vote, but first we see the Green Tribe, where we go back to the Green Tribe, where JD is searching for an idol. He says, you know, it's harder to find these than people say, you know, on the internet. People are like, oh, they're so easy to find. But he says, well, maybe somebody's already found it. And he goes through a list of people. He says, Ricard is sneaky. And he says that Ricard has the most knowledge of the game other than himself, JD. He says, Shan is smart. He wouldn't be surprised if she had one and just didn't tell anybody. He says, Jeannie's always looking. He says, Brad never leaves the shelter. So, but maybe it was at the shelter. And that's when Brad tells us, Jeannie and I already found this thing 30 minutes ago. The way they put this together was very strange to me. Like, I don't know why they decided to, like, do a 30-minute flashback. It kind of, like, threw me off about, like, wait, when did this happen? Why are you saying 30 minutes from when? Because you're talking to me now, but I just got here. So was this before you found the other one? I don't even know which one he found first.
It's super strange. And I do like that they're taking a little flexibility with some of the editing this season, where they're like, oh, it's like, here's an idol. Well, Jeff Post comes out, this is where I put the idol, you know, like just a little flip. Like, I like some of those things, but this one was really strange that we learned about something happening now in a flashback form. And I don't know if they thought it'd be too confusing if Brad finds one idol and another one after that. But
like, it made sense to me when they did this with Sydney and Nasir, because we already have gone past that night, right? Uh-huh. We're already in the next day. So we get to the Blue Tribe and she's talking to her tribe about what happened the night before. And like, they just didn't show that scene the night before because it ties into what happens the day after. Makes sense that they would flashback to the night before. But for this one, it was like, okay, you could have just shown us the scene of him finding it right away. I got what they were doing, and I appreciate that they're experimenting. I feel like this one did not land.
It was a flop. Yeah.
Yeah. But Jeannie, finally in an episode, she says that she was there when Brad found this thing. Just she wishes that she found it, but Brad finding it is the next best thing because he's her closest ally. And now we have some information on Jeannie's game, which I'm very pleased about, is apparently that she's very tight with Brad and he's her closest ally. He learns that his phrase is the broccoli one. That I just realized broccoli is just like little trees or whatever it is. I don't even remember.
Brad didn't know it either. So no one knew it.
And he recognizes, oh, Xander said the butterfly one.
I thought that was a cool moment. I did like that part that they put in there. They're like, oh, wait, Xander. And so I think that was, and it makes me like hate it and love it at the same time because I think the producer watching and they're like, yes, that's exactly what we were waiting for. So one player to realize that Xander said that before, you know, that was a moment they put these really weird concoctions of words in there. But man, it's just so, such a, I don't want to say stupid, but it's such a, difficult way to win an advantage that at, by the time 3 weeks, 4 weeks, Xander's going to go through the whole damn game without having a vote. And he has to say this stupid phrase every time. I feel like it should just be said once and boom, you're set, you're good. And maybe at the last time, but it was very interesting. I like how he found the idol and everything like that too.
Now he can't vote. And he says he feels bad for Shan that she's been looking. She's been, you know, trying so hard to find this thing. He says Shan is his number one with him and Jeannie. He said him and Jeannie, their number one is Shan. We're going to hear from Brad in his exit interviews that him and Jeannie were like super tight and they were a very visible pair on this tribe and that they were essentially trying to like court Shan to join their end of things. That in the first tribal, it felt like a essentially like a four person thing that they had going on. Brad, JD, Jeannie, and Shan, and that that you know we'll get into his exit interview more, but that now he feels like he's not sure where Shan stands, and he is trying to win her over by telling her about these advantages that he found. So he tells her about both of the advantages. And she says, this makes me feel like I'm his number one. And now I have to consider if I want to keep him around. Now we know that in the first tribal, she very seriously, it seems, considered flipping the vote against him. And then in the following episode, she outed, she ratted him out to Ricard. And now it seems like she might be changing her mind based on the fact that he's telling her this information. So when we get to like, was it a mistake for Brad to tell Shan this information? I'm very curious to eventually hear from Shan, about like, was she targeting him prior to this? Would he have left if he hadn't said this? Did she consider keeping him because of this? Because how it's portrayed to us is that she kind of almost didn't vote Brad out because he shared this information, but ultimately stuck to what she had already been planning to do, which was vote Brad out. But either way, now she knows all about his advantages and disadvantages and all of that. You know, we're again going to see that that's not great for you when people know that you're helpless.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, it's one of those tough positions. And I was reading somebody talk about it that, you know, there's a weird, like, there's two parties, I feel like, people who feel like you should tell it. Idols are a good way to gain trust with somebody or some sort of advantage with somebody versus you keep that all to your chest until you have to. And I think in this situation, I understand wanting to gain the trust of Shan. And logically speaking, when you, she might have thought, like, especially in these smaller groups, these type of advantages will be really helpful going into the merge. So having that in mind, but at the same time, I don't think, same way with Xander, you should share the disadvantage part of it where you can't vote. I think that that then makes you look as a sitting duck then, essentially, that you can't help them currently, and they might be able to take the shot at you. So I wish he just told her, if he was going to tell her anything, one of the advantages, that he was going to go to this island, and even if he's going to tell them about the vote, or like that special immunity idol he was going to get, he could have left out that he doesn't have a vote. He just has to say, like, when I speak it into existence, it'll happen, you know? So, because you can't lie. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but on specific, I'm not sure, it might be very different for Survivor, but can you lie about your powers or you just can only omit what's going on?
I believe on Survivor, you can, like, completely make up whatever you want. So on Big Brother, you're not allowed to, if you have a power on Big Brother, you can't pretend it's something that it's not. Just because of how like Big Brother works, there isn't like a paper to share and like there's no way to confirm that power. But on Survivor, I believe, and you know, I could be wrong, but I believe, cause I think Tony did this and I think other people have done this. I believe you're able to basically claim that it works however you want. But the big sort of caveat to that is all someone really needs to do is say, well, can I read the paper? And you're like, I already burned it, or like, you're kind of in trouble. And then I believe that there was one time, Abby Maria tried to get Jeff to like back her up about something that she made up. And Jeff was like, I'm not going to help you lie. that's not going to happen. So I believe that's how it works. So yeah, I think he could have, he could have showed her, like flashed her the paper and been like, hey, I've got it. I found the item. And then maybe she's worried about putting votes on him. Maybe that she thinks she may split votes, or maybe she can't split votes. And, maybe at that point she actually does flip, who knows? It's definitely, I think the vulnerability, you know, it's what Xander did and he survived. I think again, like the opportunity is there. You kind of have to take that shot.
Especially when you, it's tough, especially when you realize that he has two of them. One is something, two, and it's only been, 7 days into that game? Like, maybe in 3 days he's getting another one in four, you know? So
it's genuinely dangerous because people who find advantages tend to find more. And so if you've found somebody that's now found two advantages, keeping them around, especially as an ally, means that they're probably going to continue to accumulate those advantages, which means you're not going to. You're not going to be able to find those things. And it's the same thing with Xander. Like, he had one, he had the extra vote, and then he got the beware advantage. And it's like, you know, he's probably going to continue to find things. And if you want to be the one that finds things, you kind of got to take that person out in the same way that if you want to win challenges, you got to take out the person that's beating you. It's time to sneak off. And it's pretty pretty quiet on blue and yellow, but over on the green tribe, Brad decides he's going to Ferris Bueller it and makes up a fake body so that nobody will notice that he's gone. And I've got to say, my initial reaction to this was, this is hilarious, but I actually felt like this is, I think, more dangerous than just leaving camp. Right? It's, because if you just leave camp, like, and somebody notices that you're not there, like, are they going to stay up until you come back and be like, I'm going to wait and see where? They're just going to assume that you, like, went to the bathroom. And they're going to fall back asleep. And then you'll probably be back by the time they wake up again. Worst case scenario, you're like, oh man, yeah, my stomach last night. Oh God. I was up all night, you know, go back and forth going, you know, to the bathroom, whatever it is that you need to say. Whereas if somebody looks over at Brad's fake Brad and goes, that looks a little weird to me. And then what moves over, or maybe they want to say something, Brad, maybe they get up and have to go to the bathroom and they walk by it and they notice, and they notice that there's a fake body. Now they know for sure that something is up.
No, 100%. But that's what I loved about Brad, is that this was so inefficient way to do something that's much easier than it has to be done, that it made me so excited for the possibility of Brad within the game, where I was sure that we would see some sort of evolution of the spy shack, the spy nest, a spy submarine, whatever he might create. Brad, it's just... Super, exactly. Much more riskier than it had to be done. But I think that we just saw flares of Brad's personality. And I don't know if it was just like they only had footage of Brad for this episode. They were like, we got to make it work. But I just loved every bit of it.
I did love it. I just like, I want one of these times for like, because I feel like this happens a lot with sneaking out and like sneaking in and whatever else, like stealing a thing. Like, I want somebody to get caught. I feel like they never, ever get caught. Nobody's gotten caught, like, getting an idol at a challenge. Nobody's gotten caught, you know, sneaking into a camp and stealing something. Nobody's gotten caught sneaking out of camp. I wanted a scene of JD waking up and finding the body and be like, what?
And you know he would wake everybody up. JD would be like, guys,
yeah,
guys.
That would have been great.
Something's going on. Something's going on right now. And and then also Brad's reaction, he'd be like, yeah, I did it. Like, this is what happened. Like, he wouldn't even try lying. I feel like if he was just like, this is what happened.
Yeah, well, then you're just like, no, I just had to go to the bathroom and I decided to put a fake body there just because I didn't want anybody to be worried about my going to the bathroom. So they all arrive at, I guess, a different Advantage Island. It looked very tribally, like tribal council-y to me. But all three of them arrive, Brad, Sydney, and Tiffany, and they're faced with a decision. They must choose between two advantages, a tarp and a steal a vote. Brad immediately is like, I want the steal a vote. And really, of course he would. There's no incentive for Brad to not go on the boat, and there's no incentive for him to do anything other than choose steal a vote because he already doesn't have a vote.
Oh, yeah.
So there's no risk to Brad's risk here because he's already lost his vote with the other Beware Advantage, which immediately means that nobody is ever gonna get this tarp.
Yeah, no, it's really strange. And at first I was like, okay, so then does he have a vote now that he has zero votes and then you can steal a vote? Because I actually don't think it makes sense that if you have a steal a vote thing, they should still be able to have your normal vote to use the steal a vote, because I feel like the steal a vote actually makes those type of disadvantages. It just changes it how it's supposed to be. Now you have a zero vote. Can you like go into negative votes? Is this like what? Aspect of the game.
Double lose your vote.
Can you? Yeah.
Well, I have negative votes. But no, I think because we've seen this a lot, like, why does he lose his ability to steal a vote if he doesn't have a vote? But I think that we're sort of like looking at it the wrong way. I think production looks at it like you have lost the right to vote rather than you have lost your vote, as if you have one and you've lost it and now you have zero. It's more like you are not allowed to cast a vote at tribal, which means even if you stole one, you'd still, and then had two, you're still not allowed to use those two.
Yeah.
So I think it makes sense if you think about it in those.
No, it does. But what would be really fun, and it'd be way too complicated, but actually if you can, like, say if I can't vote, you have the vote, I still steal your vote, but now I'm unable to use that vote. So then it cuts out a vote, like a vote negator, you know, that would be kind of cool.
That genuinely, I think that given, you know, given that thought process of like, you're just not allowed to cast any votes, you should still be able to steal somebody's vote away from them, even if you can't cast it.
So I don't know. It's just, but to your point, I think they're really pushing this prisoner's dilemma, or like, you know, they really want these, and it's just not, it's working, but not working in certain ways. I mean, I think it would be actually more fun that if they get there immediately, they have a timer of 60 seconds they can talk and they have to immediately go into it instead of going back and forth. Cause then we'll see probably more chaotic decisions in that.
Well, I think also one of the reasons why the prisoner's dilemma is not functioning as well as it could is that it's happening with people on different tribes. And so we're not seeing any of the ramifications of the decisions being made. Like when somebody goes back and they didn't get the tarp or they didn't get the vote or whatever, we're not getting to see them going up and being like, so who did it? Who took it? Right? Because they can't communicate anymore. So I think that that's part of what's kind of like putting a damper on these. Because I do think the prisoner's dilemmas are very interesting and can lead to good things, but I don't know that it's worked out super well so far.
I love that. I think that's really interesting that you put it like that. If it was from the same cast, then there's like social ramifications from kind of pushing on somebody to be like, I'm going to actually do this, like regardless of it. But and if anything, it might be even weirder if you come back to the camp with a tarp, because they're like, wait, how did you get one in the first place? And this goes back to the other issue that if tarps are so important, because this season, Jeff talks about a lot, is like never before, very scare, bare bones. There's very little, but we haven't really seen that, which I'm a little frustrated about. Is that I really want to see the survival elements. If we're saying that this is going to be the hardest, if we're not going to see any survival elements, they're suffering, this and that, then give them the food, give them the tarp, give them, like, you know, to me that it doesn't matter, because then the gameplay is the only thing affected, and every damn segment is an advantage. Like, that's what it seems like.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like they cared that much. I mean, nobody there was like, please don't take the vote seal because we all need a tarp so desperately. They were like, oh, you want to take the vote seal? Oh, fine, I'll just take nothing. Like they just, it didn't seem like the survival stuff really mattered to them all that much. So we see that, you know, Tiffany initially is sort of told you should take the tarp because you can't afford to lose your vote because you're in a 4-person tribe. I actually disagreed with that reasoning. Now, obviously Brad and Sydney have incentive to tell Tiffany that, but it seemed like Tiffany agreed with it, that she was worried about losing her vote. My perspective on Tiffany's position was, in a 4-person tribe, again, having a vote steal is way more valuable to me than like having a vote singular, because basically how the tribe is working, either Evie and Liana are going to stick with Tiffany and vote out Xander next tribal, or they're not. And so it's either going to be 3-1 on Xander, and maybe he has an idol, and that would suck. But if he has an idol, Tiffany having one vote to Evie and Liana's 2 isn't going to protect her. So having a vote there doesn't matter at all if her alliance stays true. If her alliance doesn't stay true, they decide they want to take out Tiffany instead of Xander, then it's 3-1, and her one vote again doesn't matter. So having that one vote really isn't all that important in the spot that she's in, but having a steal a vote is very, very important if her alliance does turn on her. Because again, as I said, now Tiffany can steal a vote and force a tie. And now all of a sudden she's solid. Again, depending on how the tiebreak works with a steal a vote, I still don't know that exactly, but worst case scenario, she can force a tie and maybe scare somebody over or whatever, however it's going to work. But I would in her position every time risk my vote to try and get that steal a vote, especially if Sydney is saying, I want to do tarp, leading you to believe there's a chance that you would get it in the first place. So I was very surprised when she ultimately says, because I don't trust Sydney to take the tarp, I'm not going to risk my vote because it's too, I need my vote. I felt like that was a mistake.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. Cause I think only in this situation, when it's 4 people in a tribe like that, that this is actually like you do need to take the steal a vote, because in this circumstance is that it doesn't matter if you have a vote or not. If your alliance is not with you, like you said, you're going to go home. Steal a vote is the only way to at least ensure that it's a tie or somebody else goes home. And so in that situation, it wouldn't have mattered if she lost her vote for the next one, because it'd be 4-0, you know? So I think that's it was kind of a mistake. And also knowing that Sydney is leaning towards a tarp, you push for it. Like there's a really fun like prisoner's dilemma game that I used to watch on like YouTube. I think it's called the Golden Egg. It's like a UK based thing where 2 people they do certain questions at the end. They can either split the money, take the money, or half, and depending on what you do there. And so there's so many different combinations for it. And always it seems the right of way to say that, hey, I'm going to steal the money. So if you steal the money, then like it's not going to go. And so then eventually if you want to actually split, the person who says they'll steal the money, they actually split it. And like, you know, but I thought that it's different too when there's 3 people with it, because you have different modes of doing it. So I would really love to see if we're going to continue this, like you mentioned, people on the same cast, 2 people, and see where it goes from there.
So ultimately Brad does take the steal a vote. Sydney does not. Sydney did not trust Tiffany. Tiffany did not trust Sydney. They immediately seem to have bad impressions of one another, which is impressive considering how little time they had to communicate. Ultimately that means that Brad gets to steal a vote. Nobody else does. And none of this matters anyway, because Brad goes home, which means none of this mattered at all.
Yeah. We got so much Brad time that, and I get it, they might want to blindside us. We're like, oh, Brad does go home. But to me, I'm like, this was just a waste of 30 minutes of making us fall in love with Brad, see all these advantages around Brad. And now I don't know much about the people who are left in the game. It just seems such a weird editing choice to make me just feel like, unless they already decide they're bringing Brad back for the next season, where they're like, all right, we need to make sure Brad is known when we bring him back. I just didn't get it.
Yeah. Well, we then head to the immunity challenge where Brad is going to have to talk about broccoli, and he butchers this. I have the full clip. So let's just listen. Brad has to say his code phrase about broccoli, which is something along the lines of like, oh, I just realized that broccoli is just like, you know, mini trees. He interrupts Jeff, and an awkward moment to start. And then this is, his thing.
Yeah. We ain't got no rice.
Brad.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Brad.
I was hoping it was the salt water that was making my clothes baggy, but the fact is I'm just turning into a little bit of a twig, and it's kind of a fuzzy top. I feel like a broccoli. So broccoli is, grows little bunches on, small trees. So I feel like a little broccoli tree, I guess.
He's so all over the place. He starts off like big long pause. Oh yeah, and then Jeff was talking. Oh, sorry. I was just gonna say that I thought it was the salt water that was making me seem so sick, but I'm actually like a twig with like a fuzzy top, just like a little broccoli. And you know, like it's like I'm seeing broccolis everywhere, and broccolis are like, you know, it's just like I'm just. And the thing about broccoli is that it's just like a tree, and I'm seeing trees everywhere, and I'm just like a little broccoli. Like,
oh, poor man. Like, I mean, I get it. I've been up in stage before and like tried speaking, and whatever I want to say goes like literally the opposite way. I'm like the type of guy who practices something I have to say. Even if it's like, good morning, y'all. Hope you guys have a good day. I practice that 1,000 times. So I felt for Brad in that moment, but man, it was so tough. And you have, there's like a pan to Xander while he's just like, I think this is the cue.
So Xander actually does exactly what we talked about last week when we were talking about how Xander should approach this. We said he should just say, remember that time I said, I even said this thing about butterflies. This is what Xander says.
All you can do out here is introspection. I mean, all we got is time. And I know I probably sounded absolutely delirious talking about how I truly believe that butterflies are dead relatives saying hi.
Wow.
And Jeff, of course, is just loving this. Jeff is just like, oh, you have something to say, Brad? Oh, Xander, do you have a response to that? Oh, you guys are so weird.
It's so funny. And I here's the thing is like, I have to give props to Xander because I think he handled that, like you said, in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious that when you do like, do your interview, talk to him or whatever. I really want to know, did he practice that? Because I feel like he went into that like competition literally practicing how he's going to be like reply. Because for me, if he did like off the cuff, props to you, Xander, because it felt like he had that down bat. He was just like waiting for the moment. And he's like, okay, weird, but that's my moment. I'm going to do what I said. I'm going to, you know, it's like the class assignment, you know, that one kid who does all the work and you're like relying on him. And then it's the person who does it before the night of me, who's just like, note cards. And you're like, hey Taryn. And Taryn's like, yes, this is exactly how, you know, that's just kind of how it went.
Yeah. And what I love about this is that he manages to get the phrase said a second time, while at the same time sort of like erasing part of the weirdness of the first time. Like, can you believe how delirious I was when I said that thing about butterflies? Which makes him appear to be not quite as, you know, goofy as he seemed, I think, the first time, while also getting the phrase in a second time. Perfectly done. And then during the challenge, they had a moment here where it's a little hard to hear, but Xander and Brad are the last two on the platform. And Xander says over to Brad.
I like what you said about broccoli.
It's horrible the way I said it.
I like what you said about broccoli, bro. Oh, but it was horrible the way I said it. Yeah, I'm with you.
Oh, man, it was so funny. But as I'm listening to this, and then you can see no one says the third one because no one's found it. No one will ever find it. It hurt me realizing Xander recognizing, wow, I have to do this again. I figure out some way I can do this. And it just sucks because everyone who knows, like Evie, everyone on his tribe who knows what you have to say now knows Brad had it. Like, no one's going into this merge, if there is a merge or whatever, without knowing who has these advantages. And I wish it was just something, I get it, it's for like, they wanted it for the TV viewer, like for the viewership of like, it's funny to watch this, but I do wish it was like, maybe do a somersault into the water, you know, something that it doesn't show up all your cards that's, you know, I three somersaults. I don't know, something that Xander can do or somebody can do that doesn't have to be say the same thing. And now the whole tribe knows, oh, each of them had it, you know. So, oh man, it's tough. I can't imagine how they're gonna say it next week. And maybe Xander's just gonna give up. He's just gonna be like, no, because like, and you know, Jeff's gonna be like, Xander, do you have anything to say? And they're like, no one said anything. I have literally nothing to say, Jeff. And Jeff's like, no, feel free to talk.
I think that I'm going to have to start incorporating code phrases into this podcast. So I just thought of this idea. Next week, when we do a podcast, I'm going to coordinate with my guest ahead of time. And we're going to have code phrases that we need to say to each other at some point in the podcast. And then you guys have to figure out what the code phrase is.
Oh, I love that. That
Which
is
means
such a good
it can't
one.
Be too ridiculous, but maybe a little bit ridiculous. I feel like I do say ridiculous things on occasion, but I don't know. We'll see how it works.
I love that. That's a really good one. That would be really fun, actually.
All right.
That
well,
really yeah. Jeff would love it. Jeff probably would be like, Taryn, oh, yeah. you have something to say?
Yeah, Jeff would be like, you guys are so weird.
Weird.
Oh, like I made you say it.
Yeah, why don't we redo that one more time, actually? Jim, can you get this angle?
All right. So we get to, the Green Tribe ends up losing because JD's trying to do some layups and he just tanks it here. And Jeff says, sorry for you. Ooh, sorry for you. And we get to the campaigning segment where Brad tells us he's lost his vote. But hey, JD is always overselling and underperforming. He pitches it to Jeannie that JD should go. And then we see Shan catching JD with his extra vote hanging out of his pants. What is happening here? He goes off to go to the bathroom. He comes back with his pants seemingly down. Like he went off with his pants firmly attached to his waist. And he comes back with his pants. It looked like he was still pulling them up as though he was like, walked as though he walked all the way back with his pants down and was just now pulling them up. And he had the extra vote in there. Why is his extra vote in his pants? Why are his pants down? I don't understand what's happening here, Ovi.
It's so confusing. And I thought that it had to be on purpose. I forgot he even had a vote. Like, you know, I forgot that it was even a thing that he did because I was just like, this must be a bluff. This is like, you know, a Tony bluff. This is like, you know, this is one of the bluffs like all players use, put rocks in your pants and be like, may or may not have something. Or maybe Shan was like in on it and be like, wait, you have? And I like, you caught me. But then when I recognized, wait, this is actually a mistake on his part. And then also the way he handled it was like, he was like, oh yeah, you caught me. I lied. Or more, I just wish he could have been like, yeah, I actually came here to show you guys, like, this is something I got to give you trust and show you that I have this. Like, play it off some other way. Didn't be like, ah, my bad, guys. You caught me. I know I'm already on the chopping block, and this is an advantage I hid from you. Don't get me out. Like, and then it's just, like, so refreshing that it worked.
I think I figured it out, though. I think I figured out what happened here with the pants and the bathroom situation because JD, he gives us a clue. Here he says,
today it was like crap hit the fan and the fan was made of crap.
So do we think that the crap hit the fan made of crap and, it ended up with a lot of crap, and it was a big cleanup job and he was just, you know, that he ended up having to change clothes and then, you know, he had to, his pants wouldn't fit because they were, you know, too full of crap. I don't know. It's something about the crap situation. I don't know why crap was on his mind, but it also seemed very relevant to how he got caught in the first place.
I don't know. Here's the thing: is you usually have to say Taryn, you're being ridiculous. Is like one of your funny thing, weird thing. This would be actually a code word if we actually had a code. This
right?
But all honestly, I think it was happened in such a weird way, in a way that the show wasn't able to really show because they're not going to go on like Nash Diamond.
Well, they're
like,
not going to show crap hitting a crap fan. That's
they're
obscene.
Not going to be like he just crapped his pants literally, and then he had a change, and then production issues break gave him a new pant. Like they're not.
I think that he and production were they were trying to tell us the truth about the situation without being too vulgar.
Yeah, that's what I want to hope.
Crap hit the fan, and the fan was made of crap.
And it's such a weird phrase. Like you would think that was written in an advantage. Like, you know, JD's waiting for his immunity to work up there. Such a weird phrase. So, it's just so frustrating. And I was actually surprised by Shan's boldness, though, to call it out right in front of it. Like she was just like in front of everyone, her like ally, where she was. You know, which I liked, but also I was very surprised by because usually, I mean, if I see that, you're like, oh, wait, hold up. Like, and then you go whisper maybe to like one of your other team, you know, be like, hey, I think, you know, JD had something. And then you go talk to him maybe solo. But she was just like, I see it. Boom. I'm going to do it. So I liked it.
Yeah. Anytime I hear about crap hitting the fan, I always think of the movie Airplane. I just love that gag there. But yeah, I agree with you as well, though. JD, the way he handled this was, it felt so bad because he's trying to explain himself to Shan. And this is how he's saying,
and to make matters worse, I didn't tell you. You found out. So now it's even worse for me.
So, okay. I love this clip because it's him saying, to make matters worse, I didn't tell you, you found out, which just makes things worse. And like, you'd think there's some kind of like other point to this, but it's like, no, it's worse because it's actually even worse. And I have still no defense. And then just, I don't know if you guys had the same reaction as me at the end of this clip, but just the hilarity of what he's saying, followed by the music cue here.
It matters worse. I didn't tell you, you found out. So now it's even worse for me.
Yeah.
Every time I hear it, I'm convinced I'm about to hear the Curb song, the curb Your Enthusiasm. And it's such a Curb moment.
It's so, man, like, it's just digging your hole, be like, yeah, babe, I didn't just like grab the $100 from your purse. I actually also cheated on you. She was your best friend. And like, I wrecked the car. It makes things worse. I didn't recognize all that at that point, but I appreciate you telling me that. Like, it's such a, and then Chad's like, yeah, it does make it worse. Like, I expected him to be like, well, it makes it worse, but you know now everything's in the air. I'm all yours. Like, I'm indebted to you. Well, she does eventually be like, hey, I'm really indebted to you. But I also feel like it took, like, Shan and everyone else to, like, connect the dots, being like, okay, like, this is how it benefits our game, instead of, like, JD being like, I don't know. Maybe it's because JD was so, like, heart on the sleeve, flabbergasted, was so shocked about it all, was just like, yeah, it is what it is. Maybe it made her feel like, cause I think she views maybe JD as like her little brother, or like in the game, kind of like somebody she wants to like take care of, help. And so then she's just like, ah, it's JD. You know, there's certain people, like, you just give them a pass, like, ah, it's JD. And I feel like that might have been it. I don't know. I still don't understand, and we're going to get to it, but I just still don't understand how it transpired for all of this to happen, and JD still was sitting pretty by the end of the tribal council. I just don't get it. I like JD. Don't get me wrong. I like JD, but man, for super fan, a fan, for that to happen, it's difficult. It's difficult.
Yes. Well, after she finds this extra vote, Shan goes to Ricard and she says, we need to vote out JD. And Ricard says, I get that. I think JD is sneaky. I don't think we can trust him. Yes, but I also don't think we can trust Brad. And I don't think we need to vote out JD right now. I think that we should vote out Brad, essentially. And he tells us that there are two big plans. One is JD. One is Brad. He has to hope that Shan makes up her mind. And so then we hear JD talk more with Shan. He offers her the extra vote for safekeeping. He says this is either a brilliant play or it's one of the dumbest moves. in Survivor history, but
I'm a ballsy player.
It's a ballsy player. So he's going to hand her the extra vote. The extra vote. And she says, well, now I feel like JD is in my pocket and Brad, he does have an idol. And she says that she is the deciding factor. She gets emotionally connected to people in the game. And somebody's going to be disappointed. And she tells the story about how she, when she was five, she had to choose between her mom and dad. And she felt like when she chose her mom that she let her dad down, and she still carries this, that moment, of like her dad just crying after making that decision. She feels like he let him down. She carries that weight with her to this day. And she's feeling that kind of burden of like, she's really going to have to let somebody down in this moment. And I loved this. I mean, I know that, I know that I can relate to a situation like that. I know that a lot of people can relate to a situation like that. It's a very unfortunate situation that a lot of children get put into. And on top of that, it does, I think, help illuminate the real weight that is accompanying these kinds of decisions that are made on this show. We talk about it like it's a strategy game. It is a strategy game. We talk about it like it's a game, and it is a game, but it also can hurt. It can hurt to be betrayed. It can hurt to betray, especially for somebody, I'm assuming, like Shan, who is, a pastor who's used to having people put their trust in her, who's used to, who knows how to relate to each person on an emotional level, who has gotten and obtained the trust of every person and is now going to have to break that trust. I love hearing about this. I wish that we heard more. And I think that part of this, too, is that, like, she's very eloquent in her explanation of why this is painful, as opposed to just like, oh, it sucks. I really, really liked this part of the episode.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's a right way and a wrong way to humanize cast members, where they're like, sometimes it's super obvious, like right before somebody's about to go out, they're like, all right, let's put like a quick segment between them and like, why we love, like, oh, you love your mom, and here's a whole segment of why, and then boom, they're out. But I love when it's done right, and I think that's done wrong, because then you're just like, oh, wait, like, why did we get that right before they leave? I love when it's in tuned with the narrative, why they made their decision, who they are, and why this decision is so difficult for them. Like, in this specific time, like, Shan is really struggling on what to do. She talks about what happened in her past, her history, and then we're given an insight of the character, the person who Shan is, and that helps us understand why the decision is so hard for her now and possibly later. So, I really enjoy that part.
All right. Well, we get to Tribal, and it seems like there is some beef here that exists between Ricard and Jeannie. The fact that she voted him out in the first Tribal, that he still remembers that, and she does not appear to be that apologetic either. JD says that he has dropped people's trust crystals, he hopes that they don't drop his. And Shan says that
in a game like Survivor, relational stock is hard to rebuild once it's gone.
Relational stock. I think we're gonna have to add that as a factor in the stock watch here. How much relational stock do they have? I did like this. JD says, getting me out now would be like scratching this mosquito bite on my leg. It's short term relief, but in the long run, it's not going to work out for you. Between the crystals and the bug bites, he had all kinds of metaphors for why he should stay in the game.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. I wanted to see if the crystals, like, he always talks about how he's like a huge like basketball fan and everything, and I wasn't sure if like crystals were like the Kevin Garnett type of thing. Like, you know, Kevin Garnett always kept his crystals with him. He always talked about like if he broke it. Anyway, I don't know if that was a reference to that, but I really liked it. I do think it's strange that, and I don't want to fast forward, but I think it's weird that, one, we had Ricard, like, he was not a big JD fan at first, like, before we saw. And I don't feel like there's been much to show that they've gotten closer, that he wants JD here. I know Ricard doesn't like Brad, but I'm just kind of confused where it went better with him and JD. But I also don't understand that if you're not going to take a shot at, like, JD with the idol or like the advantage, which at this time too, now I'm just forgetting her name now. We literally just talked about her. Shan, when she got the advantage, like, the JD gave her the advantage to keep. And so now she has
to hold on to.
And so now, why isn't, if she doesn't want to get rid of JD, say, and she doesn't really want to get rid of Brad because he's really in her corner, why not get rid of Jeannie? That yes. somebody is, you know, because Shan now is in the middle of it all. She has Ricard connected to her. She has JD connected to her. I would still argue you should get JD over Brad because JD is close with Ricard. That then makes Ricard her own. But if you're going to still do that, the only person you're not super connected with is Jeannie at that point, who Ricard already doesn't like. Brad probably would have just tried saving himself if he knew that was a situation. I think JD was just ready to, like, do whatever Shan said.
Yeah, that was my big question in the moment when I was watching on Twitch. I was saying, I don't understand why Jeannie is not an option here, considering that Jeannie has told us that Brad is her number one. So clearly, she is pretty much the one person on this tribe that doesn't consider Shan to be her number one. And, you know, I don't think that Brad considered Shan to be his number one either, necessarily. But it's very clear to me that, that you know, that Brad seems to trust Shan more than Jeannie does. They seem to have more of a relationship than Shan has with Jeannie. But that's based on what we've seen. There may be a much deeper relationship between Jeannie and Shan that we have not seen. So that's hard to judge properly. But that was the obvious sort of explanation to me, is just keep both JD and Ricard, or JD and Brad around. Especially if they're going to be gunning for each other still. You can use either one of their advantages at any point. It felt like the right call, but we're not really, sort of like able to see all of the intricate sort of relationship dynamics going on in this tribe. I know that, Shan had told Ricard in the previous episode that Brad was eavesdropping on him. So I'm sure he was already like not really trusting of Brad either. It seemed like of all of the people on the tribe, again, Brad and Jeannie were a very obvious duo. So it seemed like one of them had to go, which is why I think Ricard was like, we're not going to take out JD, who's by himself, when we have Brad and Jeannie as a pair. We need to take one of them out. And now that they know that Brad has these advantages, it makes sense to take out Brad over Jeannie, because Jeannie can't really retaliate, whereas Brad might be able to if that idol activates and he gets his vote back and then steal a vote. That could be very dangerous for them. So for all of those reasons, I do think that the ultimate decision can make some sense with some assumptions. But what doesn't make sense to me is why they would ever even consider getting rid of JD at that point, unless they were like, unless, again, they must have had, or Shan must have at least had, a very good relationship with Jeannie. I have to assume that she did, because otherwise that should have been the obvious vote prior to Brad getting those advantages, or at least it seems like it would have been. So I think that there's just so much that we just don't know, unfortunately, that I really wish we knew more about. We still have very little knowledge of Jeannie or what her relationships are with anybody other than Brad. And now Brad's gone, so who knows? She looked pretty upset after the vote read. So we'll see where that goes. But definitely a lot of stuff to consider.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was tough because I think I still am in the camp that JD, for Shan's game, she should have kept Brad, because Brad obviously showed more loyalty to her. He can't vote yet, still has those abilities. Considers her an ally, and then Ricard is probably going to be the next to go before Shan, if anything. But my issue, I think, also is that when you're in the three tribes, right, there's going to be either some sort of merge, something's going to happen. You're already losing numbers. You already know one tribe hasn't lost a single person. These advantages are your best bet to go into some sort of form of merge, to be insulated, to have these big hitters next to you point out, like, he has an advantage, he has an advantage, I'm good. Like, you hold all this information now. So, I don't know. I mean, somebody who has two of those things is very scary, definitely. But early game, I mean, you could counter it. You can argue against it, too. And I'd be really interested to hear what you say. But I think early game, having a close ally have strong advantages can be more of a benefit than an enemy, you know? Like, it's I don't know. I don't think they're going to – because Brad really, like, confided in her that I have both of these. So, that was why I was just kind of – confused, I think, especially that, like, she also had JD's split advantage, like, to hold, and She gets JD out. And JD's not going to jury. Like, it's definitely a moral decision and might make you feel bad. But as a game-wise, now you have JD's split vote. You have somebody who already confided with you, doesn't have a vote yet, but also has two advantages potentially. Ricardo one end. And then, like you said, we are supposed to guess from what we think that she and Jeannie have some sort of good relationship. So, I don't know. I still think it might have not been the best call to keep JD. I think there might be a few more fumbled bags, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the call here, and the reason I'm not a huge fan, again, I can see why it may have made sense, and I can see why it actually may have been the best move, but the way that Shan is set up in this tribe, you know, to me, the big thing about why I don't love this as much as I, now last episode, Evie makes a move to take out Voce. But it seemed like afterward, Xander, may have actually been on board with it. We still don't know if he was or if he wasn't, but it seemed like he might have been. It's very clear to me in this episode that Jeannie is definitely not on board with the move to take out Brad. She is very upset about the fact that Brad left. And so that means that Shan very obviously took sides. And considering that Brad and Jeannie were relying on Shan to vote with them, we know that they are probably going to, or Jeannie at least, is probably going to be upset, particularly with Shan. And I think we'll probably have a lot of trouble trusting Shan in the game moving forward. And that's not the best place to be here, especially because Brad just had a chance to talk to two other members in different tribes. And in his exit interviews, he did mention that he was in a situation where it was 2v2, essentially, and that he was trying to win a third person over. And that kind of singles Shan out potentially as that swing vote. And it shows where she might have gone. As soon as Jeannie, if Jeannie has the chance to talk to other people in a swap or a merge, I think she's going to tell the story of what happened here, that Shan managed to pull them in and then swindle them. So even though Shan was in this power position, she then had to make this tough call and potentially piss somebody off. And now if I'm Shan, genuinely, if Jeannie is pissed and I can't damage control properly, I'm gonna throw this competition so that I can get rid of Jeannie next, because I don't want her coming to a swap or a merge talking about my secrets, telling people I'm not loyal. That is a potential pitfall here for Shan. Great position for her to be in, but having your tribe lose and forcing your hand to be revealed, even if you had a good one, is never a good thing for you in this game. And I'm already kind of talking about what I'm going to rate her here. This was, again, I don't necessarily think it was a bad move, but it was bad that it had to happen. And ideally she's in a position where she can vote out Brad and Jeannie's not upset about it, but it did not seem like that was the case.
No. And the last thing I'll just add to that, cause we've talked about it a lot, but, I know this isn't like the biggest concern, but also if we look at it, Brad was doing really well in the challenges. He was kind of the reason why in some of the challenges, I feel like they were really in it. And so I know there's always an argument made to be like, you know, keep the tribe strong, keep it there. But I really do think they're really at a much bigger disadvantage without Brad there within these competitions, from everything we've seen, that he's just really good at doing it. Like he like pushes strong. He does it. He doesn't give up. I don't know. I think it's going to be really difficult for their tribe moving forward. And then again, like you said, they're in a weird position now. They're four people, and Ricard has, he likes Shan, but also he might have a connection now that's growing with JD. Does Shan eventually become the odd person out when Jeannie leaves, or she leaves, or she finds an idol? You know, there's a lot more possibilities now that I think put Shan in a much more precarious position than she was before this move.
Mm-hmm. So JD in this tribal talks about how he went through life being bullied. He wanted to be like his heroes on Survivor. And this felt very much like what happened with Voce in the previous tribal. The overall vibe of this episode to me felt like, on the producer side of things, they didn't want either one of them to go, Brad or JD. And it felt like they were trying to convey that through the episode. Whereas in the previous episode, it felt like the editors were saying like, this is a mistake. In this episode, the overall vibe to me was, this sucks either way. Don't you like both of them? And again, I kind of feel like that's what I've gotten from the audience. I do think that there are a lot of people that probably would have preferred to see JD go over Brad, considering how entertaining Brad was in this episode. But I think when you have Brad, you have to mine him. The thing that was interesting to me in particular, though, was this is now the second episode in a row where they have essentially done set the episode up to be not a popular outcome. The audience has been set up to be disappointed twice in a row, which tells me that we probably will have an outcome next episode that we like. Because I don't know if they want to go three in a row of dislike, because that's when the audience really starts to be like, what terrible decisions they're making. And because like the thing is, it's not even just about like the outcome, the pure outcome. It's about how they edit the episode so that you either want this outcome or you don't want this outcome. If they had edited this episode to be like, Brad's such a doofus and JD is so endearing, it would have been even it would have been a lot easier to stomach. But instead they were like, Brad's so fun and JD is such a mess. And that JD still stayed. And that felt very similar last time where it was like, Xander messed up and Tiffany is such a mess. And Voce has done nothing wrong, but he went. And so it really feels like they're setting themselves up to be disliked so far this season, with the edit. So I'm curious to see where they move forward from that.
Yeah, no, I think it is an odd, like, choice of it. It would almost make me lead to believe that some of these people are coming back because of the way they aren't. I'm almost sure because it's a small season, COVID risks, all that. But the way they're editing, giving all these people who are leaving such really good edits. And I mean, half this episode was on Brad, but not in a way where you're like, oh, Brad's going home. It's more so like, oh, Brad's a big character. Brad's going to, you know, like they spent time with a flashback with an idol, like, you know, potential idol, a lose vote, like all this stuff to the end, like I mentioned earlier, that we don't know much about these other like castmates. I mean, anybody in the Blue Tribe, I don't even know some of their names there at this point because they haven't seen them, not because they're not interesting, but because they're giving all the attention and like good edit to the people who are going home and making me as a viewer frustrated because I'm like, man, that was great TV. Maybe somebody else is as good as TV, but we're just not seeing them on my TV screen. So like you said, I think it's just I don't know. People might start rioting next episode if they see somebody they really like go home again, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the episode. Brad is voted out. He says he put his trust in too much trust in one person. I would imagine. There is a secret scene with the Green Tribe featuring Jeannie talking about sort of providing for her tribe, which is it's a nice scene, but it's not super strategically relevant. I listened to the exit interviews. I read some of them. We learned some things from Brad, and I have already talked about some of them, but he says that he did know something was wrong, and that he was in danger, but because he had no vote, he had no power to stop it. He did consider giving the steal a vote to Jeannie to allow her to steal a vote and tie it up. But he was concerned that, that because of that, they would not be able to, survive a revote. That if there were two votes on Brad and then Jeannie and a stolen vote on somebody else, then when it came to a revote, would Jeannie be able to revote with both votes? I think Rob asked him that, like, did you ask production what would happen? He's like, no, I just assumed it wouldn't work. So he considered that. So he genuinely seemed to know he was in trouble, but again, without a vote, there's little he could do. He says that he told Shan about his advantages in an attempt to flip Shan to her, to him and Jeannie. He and Jeannie were a pretty obvious duo in the tribe. And he says in the first tribal, again, it was in his mind, a four person alliance with himself, Jeannie, JD and Shan, which makes sense because we saw JD and Brad hooking up, in the first episode. However, during the live tribal, Sarah really flipped things around. And people started chit-chattering. And the person that Brad really wanted out was Ricard. And so right from the get-go, Ricard rubbed him the wrong way. He wanted Ricard gone. And when everything got all tipsy-turvy in the first tribal, he pitched to both JD and Jeannie. Couldn't talk to Shan. She was busy talking elsewhere. He pitched to both JD and Jeannie, hey, we should just, the three of us, vote out Ricard right now. And with our three votes, they're not all voting the same. We'll carry the vote. We'll get out Ricard. However, JD responded with basically nothing. He got up and went to talk to Shan, instead of agreeing to do that, plan. And that's what pissed Brad off with JD. After that moment, he said he was done with JD, that he didn't, okay. he didn't trust him after he got up and left. Was he ratting him out? He wasn't sure. So then Brad got up, he talked to Shan, and Shan told him, don't worry, I'm just trying to throw Sarah off so she doesn't use her shot in the dark. And so they end up voting Sarah, but Jeannie was not really told this. Jeannie ends up voting Ricard because she was still kind of under the assumption that they were going to flip and vote Ricard. It wasn't assumedly, you know, again, this is according to Brad, that at least one of the reasons she votes Ricard is because he was pitching that they should at the last minute. So kind of explains some of what happened there, especially when, you know, last episode, I was very confused at why Brad was so upset with JD when it seemed like JD was the one that saved Brad from the flip. But in reality, it's because he felt like JD abandoned him when he was trying to flip the vote himself. And so interesting stuff there.
No, that's really interesting. I mean, yeah, I mean, just that circumstance. I don't know why I didn't think about it, but giving his steal a vote to Jeannie is a very viable option. And I really wish we got to see play out because that would have made things a lot more interesting. And actually, you know, it's fun some ways, I guess, to see advantages get fun, but it's a lot more fun to find them played. And I think seeing that happen in real time would have been really awesome. My question is that if you don't have a vote, are you able to still go to rocks? Like, are you still able to, like, do your save?
So I would think that with a steal a vote in this situation, Brad has no vote. It's a 5-person tribe. That means there's 4 votes. If Jeannie steals, let's say they want to vote out JD. So let's say Jeannie steals Ricard's vote. And with Ricard's vote and her vote, she votes twice for JD. And then Shan and JD both vote Brad. It's now a 2-2 tie. Now, what happens in a tie is that the people who voted for Brad now vote again, and the people who are voted for don't vote this time. So you would assume that what happens there is on the revote, now JD can't vote because he is the one that has 2 votes on him, which means that it would be Jeannie with her vote and Ricard's vote voting twice again for JD and Shan voting once for Brad, and that the tie would be in Brad's favor and JD would go home. But we don't know if the steal a vote works on the revote. If the steal a vote only works on the initial vote and doesn't work on the revote, then it's Ricard and Shan who vote Brad and only 1 vote from Jeannie for JD, which means that that Brad would go home. So it really depends on how that revote works. And then also, again, because Brad already can't vote, is it really fair that he doesn't vote on the that JD then all of a sudden loses his vote on the revote where Brad already didn't have a vote? There's a lot of weird things that happen here with the no votes and the steal of votes and the revotes. So the answer is I have no idea how it would work, but in all honesty, the way that I think it should work is that it should have worked out for the people who had the steal of vote. I would have been very curious if I was in Brad's spot and I was thinking about having Jeannie steal a vote. I would have absolutely been all up on those producers. Like, how does this work? Because that could have worked.
Oh man, it's so interesting the way you broke it down. Yeah, I mean, I guess here's my issue with it is that now this adds an element of nobody could have planned for this to happen. And then even the people with the advantages don't know how this impacts already implemented parts of the game. A vote break, going back to rocks, those are parts of the game that we know, love, have been in the game forever. Now, this advantage changes all that, but we're not given the explanation of how it potentially could change it unless we test the feature out. My last question, I don't know if I asked it right the first time, but since Brad had no vote, was he able to, if he wanted to, go pick the rocks, that new thing that we can do? Like Jeff said, like, if you take the rock, you're safe. So wouldn't he have gone to that automatically, or he should have done that?
If you don't have a vote, you're not allowed to do the
shot
in the dark. Yeah,
I see. Okay, gotcha. Just wanted to clarify that. Okay, awesome. So I guess the question now I have for you, Taryn, what do you think happens to the advantage or the immunity, the risk advantage, you know what I'm talking about, after Brad got voted out?
I assume it's re-hidden at the green camp. And that if somebody else finds it, then they now have it and they will need to say the broccoli line. But the thing is, now that, you know, they potentially know what it is, you kind of know not to open it. Well,
poor Xander. What happens to Xander?
Xander just doesn't vote until merge.
This is crazy. Oh, I feel bad.
Which is also a thing. Like, the thing is about keeping Xander last week is that even if Xander is still loyal to you and your tribe, if there is a swap and it's like, you know, it's a 2-3 split or a 2-2 split. If you have Xander as your person with you from your tribe and he can't vote, now all of a sudden you're screwed by the fact that he can't vote. So it's a strange spot to be in.
So, I mean, like, I guess he can play up the fact that, hey guys, I'm a non-entity at this point. I'm basically like, I can't do any harm. I can't vote. But at the same time, oh man, I am looking forward to and being really sad when Jeff is like, here is the, what tribe was it? Luvu? Nuvu. Here's they're back here without Brad. Brad's been our next voted out. And yeah, I just want to see. Yeah. Ooh, I want to see Xander's face when Jeff's like, yeah, Brad was voted out. And to see Xander, like, what's he like? Now it's 2 more weeks. I got to wait.
Yeah, Xander's going to be like,
today it was like crap hit the fan and the fan was made of crap.
I love that one. I love your hot buttons. They're great.
All right, let's rate these players. Let's rate them. We're going to go through the players one by one and talk through where we think they fall within their tribe and give them a number rating 1 through 10, 10 being they're playing the absolute best that they can be, and 1 being they're playing the absolute worst that they could, and they have basically no chance to win the game. I feel like we know the players decently well at this point, so I don't know that we need the photos up, but let's talk through them. We'll start with the green tribe. They went to tribal. Obviously, I think, and actually it wasn't that obvious, but I do have Brad here at the bottom spot on the green tribe as the guy that was voted out. Now, I don't think it was really that much of his fault that he got voted out. I mean, he really did get screwed by these twists. If he does have his vote, then, and he's able to steal a vote, if he hadn't found that second advantage and lost his vote, but he did get the first one and he had that steal a vote, then he's set. He wins. He can't be voted out. So it's genuinely the fact that he didn't get his vote that he lost his vote that he ends up voted out here. Otherwise he would have been fine. And it did seem like it was a bit of a choice here. He almost manages to flip, Shan. But ultimately it is still his fault that Shan wanted to side with JD and Ricard over him and Genie. So he's got to be penalized for that, but I gave him a 4 out of 10. I feel like, you know, he got voted out. It's obviously a bit his fault, but,
there's Brad right there. It's not exactly. Yeah. If the one who just got, I'll put them. I haven't pulled out cause I'm really bad with, names. I know Brad, but
well,
you give him a 4.
I give him a 4. Yeah.
His thing is, I think, yeah, I really think he was a victim of these disadvantages, I'm going to call them, because I really think he was one of the most exciting pre-merge like players we've had for a long time. And if he didn't have that disadvantage, I really do think he could have made things swing for him. And he was just such a fun character. And I know that doesn't really matter like in the terms of rating. But yeah, I think he is... I really am going to give him a 5. I think this, because I think he went out on a disadvantage. I don't think he's worse than a lot of mediocre players we've seen. I think given a chance, he could be better. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little generous. So,
I mean, I gave him a 3 last week. I'm giving him a better rating having been voted out than I gave him the previous week. But that's because, like, I think that he showed more promise in this episode than he had in either of the previous ones. And I think that, unfortunately, some of that promise ends up getting him voted out, this week. And he wasn't able to do anything because of finding those things. But that's where he stands. Next up, in the tribe here, I actually put Genie. Genie, who has prior to this been just straight 5s for me because I knew nothing about her game. We've finally found out a little bit about Genie's game, and it's that she was really close to Brad just in time for Brad to be voted out. And now it appears that Genie is at the bottom of this tribe. So that's not great for Genie. And so I gave her a 4 as well. Just overall, just not great.
Yeah, I agree. I probably just at this point, a 3, just because there's not much agency she's had in this game. She was on the blind side of this.
She wasn't included is a good point. Yeah.
And so I think 3 is probably where I would give her that. Hopefully it goes up.
Yes. Well, above Genie for me, I put JD. Also at a 4. Three 4s in a row here for me. JD, I had at a 4 last week, and I do think that his position in the game seems a little bit better, in the sense that he is solidly in with Shan and maybe Ricard. But I mean, his position does not seem super, super solid at this point. I mean, he's given up his vote advantage. I assume he's going to get it back, but, you know, who knows? I know the preview is like, never trust the previews. But it's not looking great. I mean, this was a big mistake to let it get revealed. The fact that he was even an option this week just does not speak well of his game. I think the only reason I am above a 3-4 for JD and above Brad and Genie is that he seems like he's going to be safer than Genie in the following tribal, and he should probably make a swap or merge where he'll have a chance to reintegrate. And he does seem like should be good at challenges. I mean, those layups were not great.
As long as they're not jump balls or free throws or anything near that. I don't know. I'm hovering between a 3 and 4. I think he's in a better position than Genie, but I don't think it's out of his gameplay. And I like JD. I think JD's a really cool guy. I just think that my issue with him is that he got himself in the positions from his own actions. Mm-hmm. And that's what frustrates me, is that from the crap hit the crap fan, we don't know exactly, but showing his own idol to really his... I just feel like he didn't do anything to convince, we saw Shan or Ricard that he should be to them, versus them realizing like, all right, this is better for our game from their own point of view, which I still disagree with. So I think he really lucked out here, but I do think that he's going to be able to move forward and probably find a better way to merge within the game. So probably a 4, like you said, Taren, but still hover between a 3 and 4.
Yes. All right. So after JD, I gave I had Ricard, of course, here in the second place overall on the tribe, mostly because he seems the tightest with Shan, who is obviously still the power player. Even if JD somehow jumped ship and tried to go with Genie to take out Ricard or something like that, it would still be 2-2 at worst. I guess if he got the extra vote back, he could make that work, but it doesn't seem like that's likely going to happen. And Ricard still seems pretty safe on the tribe overall. Now, he does not seem like the greatest player in the world. Just the fact that that Brad says that he was very skeptical of Ricard. I don't know that JD has a great relationship with Ricard. Obviously, Genie is not in a great spot with Ricard. That's not super promising that like 3 of the 5 people that you could bond with on your tribe are not a fan of you, and you voted out one of the others. One of the only people that did like you on the tribe. Not great, but he did kind of get his way this round, keeping JD. It seemed like he was the voice that kept JD in this spot rather than, keeping Brad, which would have been much worse for his game. So I give him some points for that overall at a round of 5. For Ricard, but I still not super high on his overall position.
I think you ranked him well. I think 5 is where I was looking at, like between a 4 and 5. I think a 5 for sure, or high 4, because Ricard, I think he was a driving force of this move we saw, and which I think was a bad move for Shan, but a good move for Ricard, like keeping JD versus Brad, somebody that he doesn't have like good relationships with. But it's so early. I think Ricard, it's weird because I think that it's kind of doing him almost a disservice, because I feel like if another player played his type of game, they would be like, ooh, this is like a cunning, sneaky guy. But I think they always kind of put an edit of a villain when it comes with Ricard and his like stuff. So I don't know. I don't think he has the edit to win the game, but I do think he'll get far, and we're going to see some cool moves out of him.
Yeah, it's really strange because I feel like the edit has just dunked on this man. Like, first of all, in the premiere episode, they set him up with the whole guys thing, which, you know, pisses off a ton of people who are still like hate Ricard because he had a problem with guys. And then, like, ever since then, we've gotten basically no content from him other than talking about how he doesn't like other people and wants them to go home. He thinks they're threats and he thinks that he should get them out. And like, no, like nothing else from him. And it's like, you see people talking like they know who Ricard is online. Like, oh, he's like the worst. He's such a negative person. Like, who would ever trust him? He's so sneaky. But like, we've never seen him like really interact with the other players. We've only seen him talking in confessionals about how he wants to get people out. We've never actually seen him being like sneaky or sketchy at all. But I feel like the edit has sort of kept him in this light, especially post like that decision in the premiere. And it's like really put this weird light on him. And a lot of people like really hate Ricard.
Yeah, it's so strange. Like, and I get like, I had to catch myself. I was like, man, I just really don't like his vibes. And I was like, wait, hold on. The only thing that didn't like him was like he was, because every confessional showed him targeting someone, but that's not his fault. He could be a very not sneaky guy because he could just be really kind to people in person, do this and that, but sneaky behind the scene, like not sneaky, but like in his confessional, he could be saying this, and that's completely fine. It doesn't define him as a player. It's just his confessionals. And we have to keep in mind, Brad was like, ooh, I don't know how I feel about Ricard, but Brad was also the same person who chased down the beach, told Chan about it to watch Ricard really not do anything, just like talk, like very straight. Like, there was more of a focus on Brad chasing him than what Ricard was actually saying.
It didn't seem like he said anything bad. I will say, I think his interaction with Jeannie about like at least you spelled my name right did kind of indicate that. And again, we have heard from Brad that he wasn't really getting great vibes from Ricard. So it's very possible that Ricard is not giving the greatest vibes. But like, it's not like we've seen enough to like know for sure by any means, at least in my opinion. But let's talk about Shan. Last week, I initially gave Shan an 8. I think I changed it to a 9. Because I was very impressed with her positioning in the tribe. This week, I am going to drop it down to a 7. I've already kind of talked about why I didn't love. Again, it's the move I'm actually okay with. I feel like given some assumptions, which I don't know for sure, but given some assumptions, I think there is a spot where this, there's a situation where this made sense to take out Brad. If you're going to take the shot at this, you know, tight duo in the game, takes a shot at Brad, who might be able to activate his idol soon, and then that could really spell bad things for you, especially because now he knows that you betrayed him. Makes sense to take out Brad over Jeannie in that spot. And then between Brad and JD, it kind of makes sense to take out Brad because he's tight with Jeannie and JD doesn't really have anybody else, especially because Ricard doesn't really like him, and it keeps you in this prime position in the short term. In the long term, I'm not sure it was necessarily the right call to side with JD and Ricard over Brad and Jeannie, who seem like probably more reliable, straightforward, loyal players in general than you know, JD, who, and I know this is sort of like the primary argument that a lot of people are using, but I don't think that's necessarily the case. Again, we know very little about these people. She probably has a better read than we do on that. So overall, I don't mind the move itself, but as I was saying, I don't love the fact that she had to make the move. The fact that her tribe lost is bad for her game, bad for her positioning overall. She is now down to 4 people on her tribe. She had to piss Jeannie off. She wasn't able to manage that, it seems. If she manages it next episode, then her rating will go up accordingly. But it seems like Jeannie's pissed off. And so because of that, I got to go with the 7 for Shan this week. She's my favorite player on the season so far, but I don't think this was her best episode.
Yeah, no, it's tough. I feel bad because you keep saying the numbers that I'm thinking of. I'm between a 7 and an 8, maybe a high 7, because I think she is like one of the better players in this type of this cast, and especially in her tribe. And I think it speaks a lot of volumes when she, like the decision she has to make here, she still like comes out looking good in some shape or form. It's just how good of a position she was beforehand. And I just was frustrated where she picked JD over Brad, because I think JD might be a little bit more of a liability going down the line versus Brad, who will always be a shield for her. I don't think she's ever going before Brad in that instant, but I think there's a chance that JD he knows the game. He might do something. He can hide his like threat level maybe a little bit. So yeah, I think it's seven to eight. I'll just say seven. But I do think that if she can get into the merge and goes forward, she has a good ability. But like you kind of brought up the possibility between Genie, if she makes the merge, she can also be kind of like, yeah, Shan was the one who really kind of was in the middle. Like she's going to get the most like heat thrown on her, you know, because Genie already knows JD was on the chopping block. So whatever he does, it's okay. She already knows Ricard doesn't like her, but Shan was supposed to be good with her. So I think we're going to see Shan get some heat next episode.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to the Yellow Tribe, Yasa or whatever it is. Let's talk about them. I feel like this is the tribe we heard the least from this entire episode. Didn't hear a word from Evie, didn't hear a word from Xander. We only heard a little bit from Tiffany, but mostly in regards to this advantage situation, and a little bit from Liana in terms of regretting her decision to vote out Xander, or sorry, to not vote out Xander. I don't really have much change here for this tribe from last week. I would put Tiffany at the bottom of the tribe in terms of how well she's playing still. I like the fact that she found this advantage, and I like the fact that she would have kept it to herself had she found it on her own. If that were all that we got from her in this episode, I would have given her at least a 4, maybe even a 5. It really helped bump up like her self-interest in the game, and I like the cutthroatedness. However, we then see her go to this, you know, prisoner's dilemma situation, immediately not click with Sydney, and maybe Sydney's hard to click with. That's definitely possible, but the fact that Tiffany immediately doesn't click with Sydney, not great. And then, in my opinion, makes a poor decision with Prisoner's Dilemma, does not go for the steal a vote, which puts her in a vulnerable position in her tribe still moving forward. I didn't love that. And overall, just still down at a 3 for Tiffany at the bottom of this tribe.
Yeah, no, I think, I know I feel really bad about this one, but I'm giving Tiffany, I think, a 2 in my book, because I think she would have been a 3 or 4 going into it. But I think the Prisoner Dilemma situation really kind of showed me in this situation, maybe moving forward be different. But Tiffany did not make a logically good decision to better her game based on advantages, which I think this season is going to be all about the advantages. So depending how you try to like set yourself up depending with these advantages is really going to show your way how you play the game. And I think she has been honestly been very saved by association. And so, yeah, I just don't think Tiffany has shown me enough to give me more than a 2. And I feel bad for saying that because I think she's a really sweet lady. But I think the interaction with Sydney wasn't really a good interaction. Even though Sydney might have came off even badly, I don't think Tiffany tried to use that situation to kind of make bonds.
Mm-hmm. All right. So next up on the Yellow Tribe, I have Xander. Now, last week I gave Xander a 5. I feel like we saw very little from Xander this week, obviously, but I was very impressed with his whole butterfly thing. This
all you can do out here is introspection. I mean, introspection. All we got is time. And I know I probably sounded absolutely delirious talking about how I truly believe that butterflies are dead relatives saying hi.
Wow.
Wow. I thought that was great. And I also loved the...
I like what you said about broccoli.
I like what you said about broccoli. Trying to like make a connection with Brad on the platform. It's everything about Xander to me, apart from the fact that he trusted Evie too much and I think said too much about his advantages, has just screamed good player. I'm going to go up on Xander this week to a 6. I feel like, the little bit that I did see from Xander, I was very impressed with. The tribe won. He also won this challenge for his tribe to keep himself, I assume, safe. The fact that Brad gets voted out here and he continues to not have a vote is obviously not great. But he seems okay for now. Maybe I'll regret this movement when he gets voted out next episode. But I think he's a solid player in a decent position. I'm not sure that he is going to get voted out, even if they do lose another challenge.
Yeah, I am super high on Xander. I've been very open about that. I like Xander a lot. I think six is a strong one. I think I'm gonna go on a seven because I really like Xander, and I do think the reason I know it's questionable, but I think that what we've been shown that he is a good player. The only issue, same issue we had with Brad, I think, is that now he has a disadvantage right now, and so he has such a high wall and high potential to him that I think he survives next tribal. And I think, I mean, I have a feeling production is going to want to see. They don't want Xander to not be able to go till merge. I think they're going to figure out some way to make somebody use all those ones. So either by next episode or the episode after that, I'm hoping, and I have a feeling production will try to move it towards that, that he will be able to use his immunity idol. He'll get a vote. And if that's the case, if he goes into a merge, I think what we're seeing is Xander is really able to make connections across other tribe members. So I think from the competition, I think he's going to go far. I think he's going to go far from the competition prowess to his advantages, to some of the connections he can make. If he gets out of this tribe in one piece with a immunity idol, I think he goes far. So that's why I'm giving seven.
And not for nothing, Brad, as you mentioned, was definitely a big force for the Green Tribe in the challenges. And so the fact that Brad is gone from the Green Tribe, it leaves them in a position where their best competitor is now out. They can't sit anybody out now. All four of them need to compete. And that puts the Yellow Tribe in a position to not be as disadvantaged and be less likely to lose and put Xander in danger in the first place. So I think overall, I'm still a little bit up on Xander from last week. Above Xander in second position, I have Liana, who last week I gave a seven, and this week I'm also giving a seven. We didn't really see anything that would change her position. She regretted not voting Xander, but I mean, that doesn't really say much about her game moving forward. It just means that she's like, and if anything, it's a good thing, a good sign for her game that she's like, you know what? I wish that I had done something else. It makes it more likely that she'll do something in her own interest moving forward. She missed the, advantage, which, sucks, but like, it's not like means she's a bad player or anything. So, I'm just still at a seven. I think she's in a good spot on the tribe. I don't think she's going to be going home anytime soon. And I like where her head's at. So, I think she's in a solid spot.
Yeah, I think Liana's a solid seven. I feel almost bad now giving Xander a seven because I think Liana's definitely in a better position in place than Xander. So I'm gonna say a seven to eight, high seven. it's not like my predictions or my ratings affect the stopwatch, so I can say whatever I want. Taryn has to watch.
Well, they would if the game was working, but the game is not working right now. So
well, fortunately, I can spitball the numbers then. So don't take financial advice from me from the stocks right here. no, I think Liana's great. I think also I really love that. I wish we got more explanation, but I did love that beginning segment where Liana was like, this is why I'm so frustrated, because it shows that she had a plan in place, but she decided, like, realized that it's not the best time to push right now for it. But I think from the edit, from everything we're seeing, we're going to see Liana go far and probably make, like, what she said. Like, this was foreshadowing for something greater that happened down the line. And so I'm excited to see Liana and what she does.
Yes. All right. And then at the top of the Yellow Tribe, I still have Evie, but I have absolutely no change in their position because we saw absolutely nothing from them. I don't think they spoke a single word in the entire episode. So I gave them a seven last week. I'm giving them a seven this week for all the same reasons. I feel like they're potentially in a better position than even Shan at this point, but I have a little bit less faith in their game ability than Shan at this point. But I do think that they are the top players in the cast at the moment. But it is just a seven here right now for Evie.
I'm a little lower on Evie. I think, seven. I would say closer to six to seven. The only reason I say that I think they're in a really good position, but I don't think as a player compared to other ones, what I've seen so far, they're in the same level. That I do think, like, once it gets shaken up, once this like structure of their tribe breaks up, they're going to be in a little bit more trouble. So I'm going to put a six on them.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Blue Tribe. The one that we have seen probably the least from, but here on the Blue Tribe. So, over on the Blue Tribe, we've got an interesting position. I am going to, I'm still going to put Heather in, I think, the last position, purely because of the secret scene that we saw where Heather is talking about how she's pretending to have a dream about Sydney, and all this kind of weird nonsense. I feel like this Nasir stuff could be a red herring for a potential Heather boot when it eventually gets there, if it ever gets there. And I feel like Nasir obviously is in trouble, but only because he's trying to like actively play the game in a realistic way. Like, he's not like, I had a dream that somebody stole my torch, so I need them to go. He's like, this guy's a threat and we should take him out. He just went to the wrong person, but he seems to recognize it as well. So for those reasons, I still have Heather here at a three. We saw nothing from her in the episodes to change my mind on that. And then right above Heather, I have Nasir there at a three as well. After last week, I bumped him up to a five. I knocked him back down to a three there as well.
Nasir right there. Yeah, for Heather herself, I just don't know enough about Heather to give her like a solid score. And I do worry that when we actually see a good edit on her, she's going to be going home that week. I think a three is probably viable for them. I think Nasir, I'm so biased because I like Nasir so much, but I think a three is where he's at. But I think the edit wise, I think we'll find him like in a four or somewhere like that. So I'm gonna put a four.
Yeah, I think if you factor in the edit, it seems like it's like for three episodes now, it's been Nasir's in trouble, Nasir's good, Nasir's in trouble. Mm-hmm. It feels like a long buildup for him just to be voted out the first time he's in tribal. It feels like his edit is being set up for something a little larger, but gameplay wise, current positioning, I have to give him a three, even though I think he might actually survive.
You're right, right. I'll give them both. I've been convinced now, influenced by Taryn right here. This is why you can't trust this Taryn stock market. He's got the hands here and there. He's slipping the $5 bill under the table. You can't see it right now.
I'm shorting his stock, so you better lower.
The pump and dump. You got to be careful over here. I think just both three, unfortunately, because gameplay as it's gone right now this year is to Sydney's benefit, I guess. We'll see.
Yeah. So then, remember, this is a full six person tribe still. But right above those two, I'm actually going to put somebody who I initially had a bit higher, but this episode has made me drop down a bit lower on her. I'm going to put Sydney. Sydney, I'm going to give a five. And it's kind of a lower five. And that's because, again, we're seeing that Nasir noticed that she didn't seem to be on board. She was not able to successfully pretend to Nasir that she was with him. And when she told the entire tribe afterward, I did not feel like that was the right move. I feel like you tell Danny and Deshaun, and you don't tell Erica and Heather, especially Heather, who's you don't have a good relationship with. I feel like she may have messed up her relationship with Nasir, who clearly had trusted her prior to that. That's not great. She also seemed to not give a good impression to Tiffany when she ran into her, which is, you know, not a great indicator of where her long-term game might end up with a swap or a merge. So for those reasons, I'm giving Sydney a five, and I'm dropping her down below Erica, who we have still seen nothing from in the game and is still a complete neutral five for me on the tribe, but still in third place overall because she's above Sydney, Nasir, and Heather for me.
Erica, because I actually needed a photo for this. And no hate to Erica. I feel really sad for her that she's getting the purple edit right here. I'm so unfortunate. Just throw something. It's an hour long. Just throw one confessional. That's all you got to do. Well,
she's in the preview, so hopefully we'll see something next week.
For Sydney herself, I'm going to give a six just because I don't think – I'm using the same logic as I use for Nasir. Even though I don't think it bodes well for her future, positional-wise, she's in a good position. And I do think she's much more of a – like, even though she rubbed Tiffany the wrong way, Sydney's a much more, it seems like, cautious player. And because of that, I can see her going far. Like, she is not going to risk it for the biscuit right now. She's not going to try to gain an advantage early on. She's really going to try to lay low and she's doing trying to do just that. I do worry that she might stir up the pot just a little bit too much, where it might like it might spill out and land on her. But I think she's a six because she is good position wise. She's a cautious player, and those are everything you want, I feel like, pre merge to go into it. Erica, yeah, I mean, five. I think I don't. I feel so sad. I think it's just a shame. Like, we just don't nothing, and it's like three episodes in. One episode, I get it. Two episodes, third episode. Come on, give me something. Yeah. Like you are like the tribe sucks. Kind of the tribe is like being disserviced from being so good that we're getting nothing of them because they're not. There's no drama to it. So I think that's the unfortunate thing about like three tribes. One tribe is always like the middle stepson, or like, you know, they don't. They're not getting any interest or, you know, love.
Yeah. After that, of course, we have Danny and Deshaun. I still have, and we basically saw, again, like almost nothing from them. The fact that Nasir was looking to target Danny, it tells me that I feel like I was in a good spot last week when I saw Deshaun as my top player on the tribe. That's going to stay the case. I would knock Danny down for the fact that people are looking to target him, but he seems very safe. I mean, Sydney tells him right away. So I'm still going to give him a seven. I think he's still in a fine position. But overall, I do still have Deshaun above him. Where are you at with Danny?
It's tough because like we just haven't seen... Like, I think Danny's in a really strong position. I'm really curious about the previews. Of course, you can't trust the previews, but there was a part where Danny was like, oh, you really want to go against me? Like, you think you can take – like, I was really excited. I'm like, ooh, where is it? Is this just in the competition? Is that him, a confessional? But I think Danny it's tough because I think he's going to be a target right when the merge – like, when we look at this cast, this is not a very big cast. Like, Danny is, like, the biggest man in there. And by big, I mean, like, this dude's strong. He was in the NFL, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, this is like he stands out more than anybody than on most casts. I feel like there's a few, you know, giants, people who are, you know, strong. Danny's in an island of his own. So, we're just going to have to see. So I'm going to give him a seven. Like you said, I think he's really good. I think he has a really high possibility to go up, but threat level is super strong. What do you think about Deshaun?
Deshaun, yes. I do want to quickly say on Danny, I know that like not all football players are like the people that throw the ball. And I don't know what position he played, but it was very strange to me that Deshaun is the one that like was doing all the throwing at the end of that competition and won it for them. It is always weird to me when like the athletes are like not the point person for those kinds of tasks. But Deshaun, I really like Deshaun is going to be ultimately, I think, my top player of the week because he's in such a strong position here on his tribe. It seems like he is the front runner of the blue tribe. I'm going to give him an eight. Now, in the previous 2 weeks, it's been Shan who has been my top pick. But I do think this week was a bit of a low point for her. I think she's still probably, we've seen more of her. I think she's probably the better player. I think she's probably going to potentially find more success at least, in the game. But I do think that Deshaun is in a really strong position. He has an extra vote. He's very well insulated in his tribe. He's tight with Danny, who, again, we are reinforcing the fact that Danny is the bigger target when Deshaun seems to be the bigger actual strategic threat. And so I think all of those things are good for him. It's just reinforced the eight for me. He got all that information from Evie. He's got that connection to the Yellow Tribe that he can use when he gets there. He knows when he heard Brad say the broccoli thing, he knew exactly what it meant. He knows that Brad found the thing. He's now going to know that Brad was voted out. He still knows that Xander has the thing. If anybody else finds it, he's going to know that they have the thing. And so all of that's great. He has a ton of information and a ton of power in the game. And I think he's in a very strong position.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, like the way you broke it down, I think Deshaun is an eight, in this week alone, solid nine. I think he is as good as a position as you can be because he's not the person being targeted at all. He's a meat shield in Danny. I think he almost kind of like laughs it off when he hears like Nasir being like, oh damn, because like he just knows how insulated he is. He's in the only tribe of six, can potentially go into the merge like that. I forgot he also has, like you said, a he has an added vote. Was it still a vote?
An extra vote,
which is crazy. Connection to Eevee right there on that tribe, but also the knowledge of how these immunity advantages work. So I think we haven't had like a like in a confessional about him, but I think he's going to eventually look for the immunity. He knows what it's about. So my only concern, though, is that he knows Brad has it. He knows Xander has it. So what happens in the between the time before they get voted out? If he actually knows where the immunity idol is, grabs it thinking he's going to use it or like get it, but then finds out Brad was voted out. So that's the only disadvantage I can see that he can deal with. But even then, I think he'll be able to hide it well enough. But I think he's in a great position.
Yeah, this might be weird to say, but I think that I don't know how the swaps and the merges situation are going to work. But I think that Deshaun is in a position where if there's a swap to two tribes before a merge, I think that he is in the best position. I think that he is in a very strong position because in a merged or in a swapped tribe where he's got probably, you know, let's say there's been 4 people voted out so far from 18 to start. So there's 14 people left in the game. If we do a swap to two tribes, even let's say next episode, there's a swap to two tribes, which doesn't seem to be the case. I mean, they were talking about Blue Tribe throwing the immunity. So, it doesn't seem particularly likely that there's actually going to be a swap there, but let's say there was a swap to 7, that would not be the greatest, but if there's a swap at 12, it's going to be 6 and 6, which means he's almost, he's in a spot where he likely will either have a majority or, at least a 3-3 split, and he has an extra vote. And, there's no reason for your tribe to not, stay loyal to you when you have the numbers. That'd be great. If it goes to a merge situation, they stick in these 6-person tribes all the way until the merge, then he may have a problem where now the other two tribes will gang up on his tribe. And then you have players like Nasir jumping ship. And all of a sudden you're one of the big targets on that side. That's going to be much worse. So I think that a player like Deshaun in the spot that he's in right now should actually hope for a swap rather than going straight to a merge. That will be interesting to pay attention to as well.
No, I agree. I think it's going to be really interesting. I think that's the level we're seeing, you know, the comfortability Deshaun is in his position, that we know that now we have to look into a swap or a merge to see when he'll be in danger. Like, that's how insulated he is versus every other great player in the season. Eevee, Sean, all these people still have a potential of maybe going home before their tribe, you know, goes away. I mean, they might be decimated if they keep losing, you know. That's not going to happen to his tribe, so. Really interesting to watch, and he's an eye to keep on. I think fun cast. I think the advantages we can argue might be an interesting addition. The island of advantages, as I call it, this season. But the cast itself have been a really bright spot in a kind of a time where we didn't get Survivor. So love watching it.
All right. Well, that's what we have for you this week on Survivor. Any final thoughts, Ovi?
I'm looking forward to watching it. Thank you for having me, Taryn. Whenever you need me, you know I'm here, and I'm excited to be able to talk to Survivor with you guys a little bit more. And yeah, I'm excited. We'll see how these stocks go on. Last thing, who is your winner prediction? Who is, right now, do you have somebody that you think is? I don't know if you've done this yet, so I don't want to spoil anything.
It's interesting. Shan has the best edit to me by far. Yeah. I think Evie last week and then reinforcing the decision seeming to be a mistake to me, has knocked Evie's points down a bit. Which leaves Shan as like the sole real front runner, at the moment, but it doesn't feel like it feels like it's too much too early for Shan to me. And so I am starting to look at like who looks really good, that we just haven't seen too much of. And I'm looking at people like Deshaun, like maybe even Danny, you know, maybe even somebody like Liana or Xander. Like I'm looking at some of these sort of like people that aren't quite in the spotlight, but might be pushed forward soon that did have big presences in the first episode. And that, you know, again, you know, Danny, I think even more so than Deshaun at this point has probably a better edit just because he was more prevalent in the first episode. So I don't know. I don't know that I'm settled yet on one winner pick at the moment. But those would be my top people for sure.
Is what you're telling me.
No, not Erica. Yeah. Strategically, I would have the most faith in Shan to maneuver, but I would also have a lot of, I just haven't seen enough of Deshaun to know for sure, even though I, you know, again, yeah, we're rating on like a different scale here where we don't have all the information, but strategically, I'd put my money on Shan. She just seems like the most talented player so far. But edit wise, there's just something about it that is not all the way there for me, but I'd love to be proven wrong.
Can't wait to see it. Well, we'll have to see if those predictions come true in the short season. So there's only, I don't know how many episodes left, but a good amount of episodes in a short season. So.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me here this week. It was very fun. Make sure you find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. I stream during the episodes live with you guys to sort of like watch with you and give my thoughts as the episode is airing. And my reactions to it. You can also find me on Twitter @ArmstrongTaryn. We're doing some Big Brother interviews. We talked to Arissa Cox on Monday about Big Brother Canada and this year in Big Brother. We've talked to Hannah from Big Brother 23. We did our final roundtable. We rated all of the players in the final Stockwatch roundtable ratings for Big Brother on Tuesday. And we've got more of those Big Brother interviews coming to you very soon. So stay tuned for those. Yeah, that's what we got. Make sure you tune in next week when we talk about next week's episode of Survivor. Ovi, where can people find you?
Y'all can find me on Twitter @TheOviKabir. And then if you want to find me on Instagram, it's @OviKabir. Thanks again, Taryn. This was so much fun. Thanks everyone in the chat from everywhere. I always love doing this and, hope to talk to y'all soon.
All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us here, and I will see all of you next time.
Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual sees. Hey.